Hey, football fans, this is Diana Rossini from The Athletic. Get the top stories in pro football snapped directly to your inbox with our latest NFL newsletter, Scoop City. Jacob Robinson and I will bring you the daily scoop of top NFL articles, posts, and podcasts every Monday to Friday. Sign up for free now at theathletic.com/scoop.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Standing Room Only podcast. Yes, I'm your host, Ben Standing, and I cover the Washington Commanders for The Athletic, which means I am hanging out, still waiting for some more owner news update, as you guys are as well. We did have some off-the-field news today for the Commanders in something that will sound not great, but actually I think is a good thing regarding the sale of this team. We'll get to that in a moment. Today's guest, though, it's not often you get a Hall of Famer to join you, but we have one of those today in my colleague David Aldridge from The Athletic. DA, of course, and I talked about the Commanders, got DA's take on where he's at with perhaps the end of the Snyder era. We also dipped into DA's NBA ties by asking what he thinks about Josh Harris. What does he know from Josh Harris? If he takes over, what could we expect from a Commanders for the Commanders? Again, this is an owner who was there for the process with the 76ers. And, that's a pretty bold move, however you think about it. So we discussed that. We also got into his view of the quarterback situation. So we talked a lot about the Sam Howell, Jacoby Brissett, and do we still buy into the idea that Ron Rivera is comfortable with that pairing, knowing with a new owner coming in, his time could be up. But that's not all we did. Because DA is DA, and I had some thoughts as well, we got into a bunch of other topics. We talked about the overall local sports scene, how it's pretty dismal across the board, and how this is a chance with a new owner for the Commanders to run away with the idea of who's the most popular team in this town. It already wasn't much of a debate, but with the Nats and the Caps in particular down from where they were a few years ago, this is the Commanders' opportunity to really run away with that. But we made some comparisons between the Commanders and the Nats and the Commanders and the Caps. And then, of course, had to talk about the Wizards and the NBA playoffs with DA. So a really well-rounded conversation, but a lot of Commanders right at the top. In addition to that, once we get through with DA, and he and I went for about 50 minutes, I'm going to answer some of your mailbag questions. I have a brand new mailbag up on The Athletic today where I answered some of your questions. There will be a part two as well, but I had a lot of fun questions that I wanted to get into. I will answer some of them here on the podcast. So a lot to get into. If you are not already a subscriber, let's rectify that right now. Go to iTunes or wherever you do your podcasting. Hit the subscribe button for Standing Room Only. Try to pump out 2 to 3 podcasts a week. A lot of draft coverage going forward here. As you might expect, you can check back episodes from last week with regards to the draft, where this team is. And, of course, we talked at the end of last week we talked a lot about the end of last week about Jeff Bezos and his role now in the Commanders ownership sale. So check all that out wherever you do your podcasting. And, of course, go read my mailbag and everything else I have up on The Athletic. All right, so a couple quick notes before we get to my DA conversation. News this morning out of the Washington, D.C. Attorney General's office. You may recall, the D.C. Attorney General's office towards the end of 2022 had filed 2 lawsuits against the Commanders. One of them was settled, and that announcement came today. The Commanders will pay $625,000 to a combination of D.C. and former ticket holders who made deposits. And the money, some aspects of those deposits should have been returned to the clients, to the customers. They were not. Washington is now paying $625,000. That's a combination of paying some of that money back, as well as a fine from DC. Again, it's another negative headline. And for what it's worth, the organization is refuting the claims that the DC AG made about this. And if you're saying, well, wait, they're making a payment. Relatively speaking, $600,000 or so is a rounding error when you're discussing a $6 billion sale, right? If that's what it took for them to move on from this, it was probably wise to do it. When we talk about Dan Snyder reportedly saying he wants indemnification for future potential lawsuits or costs or things like that, these are the types of things that are in the air. This is one thing now that's at least been checked off the list. And I'm not dismissing or I'm not saying that they did anything wrong. I'm just saying if the goal is to focus on the big sale, moving on from these lawsuits is a good deal. They've previously settled with Maryland for a smaller amount than this was. Virginia still has a different lawsuit in the air over, or not lawsuit, but like the bank fraud situation from the Eastern District of Virginia that ESPN reported about a couple weeks ago. There are still investigations in the air, including another one from DC that is still out there as well. You can read more about all of this on The Athletic. We have a news story up on this with myself and ironically, David Aldridge contributing on that. So the headline doesn't sound great, but in terms of the sale, checking this off is good for that purpose. So keep that in mind. Speaking of the team, these top 30 workouts continue here. And for those who don't know what that top 30 term means, it's not necessarily the top 30 players. It's just each team is allowed 30 individual visits with prospects at the team facility leading into the draft where they can hang out with them for the course of a day or whatever. Get a better feel for the person and the player. Washington has done a bunch of these already. This week, cornerback Emmanuel Forbes from Mississippi State is one of the players coming in, I've been told. He is a potential first-round pick. If you look at someone like Mel Kiper, he previously had Forbes to Washington with the 16th pick. I don't know that everybody views Forbes at such a level, but he is somebody that should likely go somewhere in the top, 50 picks. So a name to keep an eye on there. In my mailbag story that is up today, I broke down all the players that I am aware of, either by my own reporting or confirmation, that have come to the Commanders or are scheduled to come. And what you see with the list is, forget the individual players. Sometimes that matters. Sometimes it doesn't. Jahan Dotson didn't come in for a 30 visit last year. But from a position standpoint, of the 15 players I've been able to confirm, all but three are either offensive linemen or cornerback / defensive backs, which is exactly the needs that Washington, their top needs, the needs that we all view as their biggest concerns, questions, etc. So you can go check out the names there. I will just mention Brian Branch, safety from Alabama, who can also cover the slot. He was on the list. A bunch of offensive linemen, some tackles, some guards, including Steve Avila from TCU, who's probably a day two pick on the list as well. So you can go check that out to see who you might be interested in. Joey Porter Jr., Penn State cornerback, often viewed as the third corner in this draft, is among the players who's visited Washington as well. So go check out the mailbag if you want to see the full list there. All right, as I said, I'll answer some more of your mailbag questions, but I want to get to the DA conversation. A lot to get into here. Like I said, a really well-rounded DC sports conversation. A lot of Commanders, though, weaved throughout the conversation. We learn more about Josh Harris, the potential new owner for the Commanders, and we talk some Wizards, some Nats, and a bunch more. So let's get to that right now. My conversation with David Aldridge, and then we'll get to your mailbag questions here on the Standard Groom Only podcast. All right. Don't really need much of an introduction here for our next guest, especially to anybody who plays it. It is 2K or NBA 2K, right?
It is 2K. Yes, sir.
I don't want to get the branding wrong. My colleague at The Athletic, David Aldridge, is with me here. We have a lot to discuss. The NBA playoffs are about to start, which means, of course, that the Wizard season just ended. So we're going to talk about a little bit of that, of course, to use David's insight into that. But we'll start off with some of the Commanders things. And then I guess first and foremost, David, how are you doing? It's there's a lot going on here in D.C. You got the Commanders always commandering. You're busy with the NBA. You're keeping tabs on the Nats for us. How are things going in your world?
It's busy, you know, jumping back and forth as we take this today between Commanders news and Wizards news and long for and, you know, features I'm working on and stuff. But that's the gig, right? So but it's better to have a lot to do than not much to do. So that's a good thing. Even though the teams in DC are all kind of struggling right now, their struggles are still interesting enough to cover. So that part's been fun.
I mean, this really is like there have obviously been some lean years for these teams, but at least over the last 20 years since Alex Ovechkin arrived, more or less, the Capitals have always been at least a playoff team, basically,
right?
Let alone a contender. And now they're out of the playoffs. No Wizards. The Nats look like they may have the worst record in the league, which leaves the Commanders at 8-8-1 plus all the Snyder stuff as the best team,
right?
What a weird dynamic.
It's been weird because, you know, you're right. I mean, the Caps have always are, you know, really the last 15 years. I mean, they had varying degrees of being a contender, but they always have been a contender, right? As long with Ovechkin and Backstrom and, you know, their John Carlson and their various other pieces and adding Oshie, they've always kind of been in the mix somewhere. Like you could make a plausible argument that, hey, if they get hot and they get good goaltending, like maybe they could make a little run here. But yeah, I mean, them just kind of being out and kind of facing this, they're in this weird position now where it's not really about contending for a cup. It's just about making sure Ovechkin breaks Gretzky's record. That's kind of like the operating principle of the organization right now. So, but then the Nats were good for 10 years, right? I mean, they had years where they weren't contending, but they were still good. I mean, they still were a pretty good team. And then they've had years where they were, you know, won divisions and had a chance and could have gotten to the series. And obviously they won one, the Caps won one, you know, the Mystics won one. It looked like it was title town here for a while. So, right. So that's gone away. And it's now this kind of weird thing where we're not sure how long it's going to take the Nats to kind of get back, and the Commanders sort of look like they're going in the right direction, but you can't really tell. And it may not even matter if a new owner comes in and blows everybody out. And then who, God knows what the Wizards are doing. Yes. Nobody knows. It's no sense. I have right. No sense of what the plan is, you know, like,
yeah. Right.
So we're just in this weird place, but even the rebuilding is kind of interesting because you can, like, if you don't know anything about hockey, you can count. So watching Ovechkin score goals has some meaning, right? And so that makes some sense. And then baseball, you know, it's always been about next year and the young prospects in the minors coming up and how good can they be. So at least the Nats they can make an argument that they pushed the reset button. They went all in. They traded everybody. And they're doing what we all think the Wizards should do, right? Which is just start over. And but in the meantime, in the middle of that starting over, you had a 100 loss season last year. You're probably going to have another 100 loss season this year, and you don't even get the benefit anymore of, you know, a bad season leading to a sure top three pick because they changed the rules in baseball for the draft. So the Nats don't even get that benefit this year. They'll get a high pick, but not as high as they would get normally. So. Fascinating times here in DC.
I mean, if we could figure out a way like 2 years ago to have like one of these like Freaky Friday deals where the Nats and the Wizards change their mindsets. The Nats do what the Wizards did for Beal, but do it for Soto or Trey Turner. And the Wizards do what the Nats do and recognize that this isn't going anywhere and trade everybody for prospects to effectively start over.
Yeah.
Then everybody would be happier, I think.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Because people, as baseball, you know, it's a long season, man. I mean, it is really hard to kind of keep people's interest over 162 games unless you give them a reason. You know, like, it's tough. I you know, when they traded Soto, I wrote this, like, you know, to be a fan in baseball requires an amazing amount of commitment. Like, you have to, and it doesn't even matter if you don't go to a single game in person, you have to watch a baseball game 162 times, you know, like, or at least, you know, 110, 120 times a year. Takes a lot of time. And if you do go to games, a lot of money, you know? And so you got to really be in to baseball to watch that, to sample that product. So to me, I think you're right. And that's kind of what I didn't understand about the Nats, which was if you can make a rationale for not keeping any one of those guys that they've let go over the last few years for different reasons, but you can't make a rationale for letting them all go. That's my problem with the Nats. They let them all go, like, build around somebody, you know, like, pick one of them, pick Trey Turner, fine, pick Soto, fine, you know, pick Anthony Rendon, fine, but build around someone. And they chose to just let them all go or get rid of them all. And I just think that's a lot to ask of a fan base that's used to a team being really good and having a chance to win the whole thing.
Right. And of course, like, to tie this back into the Commanders, you know, we had the stretch you mentioned when all these different teams are winning titles and the Caps and the Nats have several year runs of being some level of contender, while the Commanders, or whatever name they were called at the time, in, you know, just continued to scuttle. There was always a Snyder tax, it felt like, and that kept the ceiling down. And there was this talk of, like, oh, can these other teams supplant the Commanders as the best, the most popular team in town? That always seemed incredibly dubious to me.
Yeah.
And now that we're at this point, where as we're talking on Monday afternoon, we're expecting a sale of this franchise at any minute. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying we're all waiting for something.
Right.
That at the moment that happens, the idea that any of these other teams, especially in their current condition, could be compete with the football team as for popularity goes way, way away, because it's only going to be up from there. I'm not saying they're going to win more, but people would be more excited. So where are you at right now as a man of the people? Where are you at right now as a guy who's covered this team? You've lived here.
Yeah,
that we actually might be to this point where Dan Snyder is no longer this albatross for this franchise and frankly for the area.
I mean, it seems, you know, you don't want to be Charlie Brown with the football, right? Like, this time it's going to happen, right? So I want to believe it's going to happen, but until it's announced, I just think billionaires operate on different kind of values. And they just do, like, they can do whatever they want, and there's very little consequence to them doing whatever they want. And so whereas a normal person gives you their word or makes it clear that they're thinking of doing something, you kind of want to hold them to their word. Well, you can't hold a billionaire to their word. Like, you have very little recourse. So you just have this, at least I'll speak for myself, I have this back of my head that Dan Snyder could just wake up tomorrow and go, you know what? I don't feel like selling the team now. I'm going to keep it. You know, he could do that, and there's nothing anybody could do about it, right? So, I mean, you keep hearing that the other owners are done and they're tired with it and they want to move on and all that. I don't know. I still am not sure there's 24 votes to get rid of this guy. Maybe I'm wrong, but I have that in the back of my head. But certainly, it seems like you would think the league would kind of make sure that this gets done now, having kind of invested a lot of time in this process over the last few months. There certainly are credible groups lining up, making offers to buy the team. And so I'd like to think that this would get done finally. And I think you're right, Ben. Once this gets done, the Commanders go right back to number one. I mean, I don't think that anybody should be under any illusions. While I believe that this is much more, there's many more people interested in basketball in DC than there are in football, because there's just so much great basketball from the high school level through college, and not so much the pros, but at least you have occasionally interesting Wizard seasons.
Plus you can follow the season O'Malley plan and just go watch the visitors.
Yeah. I mean, the Commanders, there's institutional history with the Commanders, right? I mean, there's people who have loved this team for generations, and the success is beginning to recede. And, anybody under 40 has never seen this team do anything, right? But there still are enough people 40 and older that remember what it was like when they were good and how the city reacted. And so I think that they will come back immediately, because the expectations will go back to, well, if we just have non-toxic ownership, we could be pretty good. So I think that's where a lot of fans are going to be.
By the way, not to go back to the Wizards, we'll get to them later, but like, I just had a Passover Seder the other day, and part of the towards the end of the story is, the Jews got out of Egypt and wandered the desert for 40 years. And while we were discussing some level of this, I was realizing that the Wizards have wandered the NBA desert for over 40 years at this point. So it puts in perspective how long that was.
Who's Moses? Who's our Moses?
I don't know they had Moses Malone. That didn't help. I think we're waiting to figure that out at this point. I mean, I'm with you on the Snyder thing. I keep saying, until the horse is in the barn, I'm not going to assume anything. But it does feel like we're in a position where I can't even imagine what would happen in this city if he says, yeah, I've rethought it and I'm going to stay, independent of what the NFL owners do or don't do. I just can't even, I'm going to tell my editor, I'm out. I'm taking a few days vacation.
I have to reassess my life choice.
Right. I can't even imagine what that would mean for the city. But it does feel like it's heading in that way. There's been a lot of talk, of course, about should this happen, whenever it happens, what should priorities be for a new owner, things like that. I'm curious, where are you at on the idea of the rebranding? Because they've already gone through three names now.
Yeah,
in 2 years,
right?
Clearly, Commanders has not stuck. Maybe it will over time, or if they win, but it hasn't stuck. Then this is now becoming a bigger topic, it feels like, at least online. Where are you at on the idea that if a new owner comes in, whether it's the first priority or just somewhere on the list, that they should actually look to rebrand, or are you kind of over that whole thing?
I think I'm kind of done with that. I mean, I think these things are very, I don't know what the word is I'm looking for. I just don't think it's that big a deal. I can't imagine finding anything approaching consensus on another name change. You know what I mean? I don't know what the point of that would be, because no matter what name you come up with, people are going, a large segment of your fan base is going to hate the name. That's just kind of where we are in the world right now. No matter what anybody says, somebody is going to find fault with it, So why even go through that rigmarole again? I would just stick with this and ride it out. And this is the name, and get used to it, and buy a t-shirt if you want, or don't, I just don't think it's to me, it's not a hill worth dying on for a franchise that has so many issues. Besides this, I mean, we've kind of all crossed the Rubicon on it. The people that want it to go back to the old name and are going to pout about that for the rest of their lives are going to pout about that for the rest of their lives. There's nothing you can do about it. And I think there's, maybe 10% of the population likes the name for whatever reason. And then there's probably 60, 70% of the people that they're like, I don't really care. It's, they win, I'll support it. If they lose, I'll complain about it, right? So I think that's where the vast majority of Commanders fans are right now. I don't think that there is, I don't know what the point of it would be, Ben. What would the point of going through this again be? You know, you went through all this trouble trying to sell people on Commanders, you know what I mean? Like, went through all the history of this is why we did it, and these are the colors we're using, and, you know, I don't know. I think there's, the franchise has bigger issues right now, to be honest.
Right. I think the biggest takeaway that I'm seeing from people, I mean, like you said, some just can't stand the name for whatever the reason. I think others see it as a reminder of the Snyder era. And I get that, but, like, I would just say if he's not here anymore, just move on from that. And, you know,
I agree.
The new owner's got to worry about the stadium. Like, if we're not talking about the football stuff, the stadium has got to be the bigger deal, and it will be for an owner. That's how they're going to get their money back quicker, by getting a stadium going and then getting all the, you know, the everything that kind of comes with that. If in 5 years, whatever it is,
yeah,
the name still is a disaster for whatever the reason, okay, well, then go from there. But I would, right, say try to win and build a stadium and then see where you're at.
Yeah, no, I agree with you. I certainly think going forward, the first order item of business for the new ownership is finding a venue, or finding a municipality to do a deal with for a new stadium. And I believe rather strongly that once the sale is finalized, then everybody's back in business. You can go to DC, Maryland, Virginia. Everybody's going to want the new stadium with the new owner and not Snyder, you know what I mean? So everybody will be back in and give you their best offer again.
Yeah, no, I agree with that. Now, obviously, whichever owner ultimately gets it, you know, it's hard. People keep wanting to ask questions. Do I think a new owner will want to do a rebrand? Will a new owner want to keep Rivera? Will a new owner want to go get Lamar Jackson, whatever it may be?
Yeah.
And of course, the variable is why I have no idea. Like, if we're talking about an individual human being, it's hard to know until we, especially for these, the ones who have never owned a franchise like Jeff Bezos. I have no idea. I'm not going to look at how he's right. run the Washington Post or Amazon to determine what kind of a coach he wants. That said, Josh Harris Group is the leading contender at this point, just based on the fact that they're at each check mark, they've been there where others have not. Josh Harris has a track record. He currently owns the Sixers plus the Devils. You are Mr. NBA. Right. You got any feel for Josh Harris as to what he might be? He's been pretty bold in Philadelphia in a couple ways. And that to me is pretty exciting.
Well, I mean, I think Josh, I think Josh would be a kind of, 21st century type of owner. I mean, I think there would be a lot of number crunching, a lot of analytics, a lot of leaning into that to kind of determine the type of players and team he would want to build. That's what he's done in all of his companies, starting with Apollo Global, which is, this huge firm that just sucked up companies and redistributed the personnel and sold them for enormous sums of money, and did it with the 76ers, obviously leaned into the process with Sam Hinkie for a while, and then kind of finally I think it was both he got tired of the ridicule, and I think the league said, hey, you got to do something, you can't keep doing this. And change that. But, the process did produce Joel Embiid, right? I mean, they got Joel Embiid because they tanked for years and years and years and got a generational player out of it. So I don't think he will do that in football. I just think it's harder to do in football. Because one player, no matter how great they are, unless it's a franchise quarterback, can't lift you up in football. You really do need a whole lot of good players to win in the NFL. So I don't think he'll do a process type thing if he gets the team. But you're right. I mean, I think they've checked every box. You have a guy that could buy the team by himself, basically, but then you added local ownership, another billionaire in Mitch Rales, who a lot of people know locally because of his work with local media here. And then you add, you know, a silver plated celebrity in Magic Johnson, who also has means, not the kind of means that the other people have, but Magic's not poor by any stretch of the imagination. He's really rich. He's just not billionaire rich, but he's really rich. So you checked all the boxes that I think people would have questions about going forward, if you're the NFL, certainly. But having said that, you mentioned the guy that can literally blow everybody out of the water anytime he feels like it, right? Like Jeff Bezos could just say, you know what? I'll give you $10 billion. What the hell? You know, I just feel like doing that today. And they would have to take it, right? Like, they'd have to take the $10 billion. So you can never say never, but certainly I think the Harris Group is the leading contender right now. And certainly makes a very credible ownership group with something of a track record in terms of spending money in the NBA. And also, you know, I don't know hockey as well as I know basketball or football, but it certainly looks like the Devils are, you know, emerging as a good young team, even though they're not quite there yet, but you can see that they're getting there, right? And so they've taken that tack with the Devils of building through the draft and going young, and it's starting to pay off there. So I think he would be a perfectly good owner. Would he be good to work for? Well, I don't know. I don't have to answer that question, but I don't think he would be Snyder. I'll put it that way.
Have you ever, I assume yes, because you talk to everybody, but have you ever interacted with him much? I don't know how
not how a whole lot, because he doesn't do a ton of interviews. I mean, he doesn't talk very much. I talked to him very briefly at one. It was probably when they brought Jerry Colangelo in, when they fired Hinkie, and he was at one of those availabilities and spoke very briefly about why they made the move. But he doesn't. He's not available to the media very often. Certainly not the sports media. He has talked more with some of the business writers. You know, there's stories about him in Forbes in which he's quoted about the businesses that he runs or has run in the past, but in terms of the sports teams, hasn't done a lot. And I certainly would expect that he would do something when he comes here, because he's a local guy. Even though he went to school up, I think he was at, was it Princeton or Harvard? One of those.
I think it was. But, was it Penn? I've lost.
Or Penn? Yeah, I'm not quite sure. You're one of those, right? And
yeah.
But I think his family's from the D.C. area, if I'm not mistaken. And I think there's a reason why he bid on the Commanders, not just because they were the next team available, but I think there's certainly some local ties here that would make it compelling for him.
Yeah, he went to Penn for undergrad, Harvard for business school. Mm-hmm. And the field school in the Northwest, and then he grew up in Chevy Chase. So
definitely
the local ties.
Right.
Yeah, well, look, again, anybody coming in is going to be viewed more favorably than the guy who would be leaving, but at least there is some track record here. And, you know, you mentioned he'd be a new wave owner. I think this is a part that's interesting with regards to what changes could be made eventually on the football side. Mm-hmm. It's not just that he's into analytics. Forget whether I even know that he is or not. He's the guy that hired the guy who is the face of all analytics
right.
in sports, basically, and Daryl Morey as the president or GM or whatever the exact title he has. That is a clear indication of what kind of a guy he's looking at. And then you come here to Washington. You know, Ron Rivera, part of the reason why he was let go by Carolina was because their new owner, and David Tepper, also a 21st century type guy who was big into analytics. Yeah. Rivera has been pretty, even here, has been kind of like, it's not a topic that comes up a lot. They've got a pretty small department. I wouldn't think that would bode well for Rivera, but, you know, that's for the future to consider. But I do think that's important when trying to figure out what Josh Harris might bring here.
Yeah, absolutely. I certainly agree with you that it's going to be much more inclined to, you know, really working the margins and really trying to find, you know, the competitive advantages where you can through numbers, through process and things like that. And certainly, you know, I think it explains a lot about some of the moves that the Commanders have made this offseason, to make it clear that they're going to go all in on trying to keep as many of their good players as possible to make one real run at this thing next season and try to put up a number that's just so big that they have to keep them. They have to give them a new contract. You know, like, I don't know how you could possibly interpret that any other way. You know, like the pain deal, it's alone just kind of screams that, hey, we're all in, all chips to the middle of the table right now. We're not letting anybody go that can play football going forward. So we're going to keep as many guys as we can for 2023 and see what we can do.
So that's a good segue to my next question about the Commanders for you, and that is with regards to their quarterback situation. Yeah. It was very early on in this offseason when we started to hear that Sam Howell is being positioned as their QB1 entering the offseason, and I could get it to a degree if they were more of this is a brand new coach, or they're truly in a rebuild scenario, but it's neither of those things. They're a middle of the pack team with a coach who probably needs to win to keep his job, which is why it is still weird to me on some level they're going with Sam Howell, with considering his experience, even though I like the player. They do have Jacoby Brissett as well, but you know, that's an upgrade over Heineke and Wentz, but it's not the same as saying he's the difference maker. So we haven't heard from you about this in a minute. Where are you at now with what Washington's QB situation is, knowing, like you said, that it feels like they're in for this season, and yet this is the first time under Rivera they didn't really go all in on finding a quarterback.
Yeah, I think it's just I think it's more than anything, Bennett, I think it's just a product of 3 years of abject failure trying it the other way, right? Like they, you know, they went in and got Alex Smith. Didn't work at all. You know, they couldn't get Matthew Stafford, right? So they got, you know, they went for Ryan Fitzpatrick. Lasted a half, you know, complete disaster. Didn't work. Then they doubled down on it and went all in on Carson Wentz with everybody in town. Was like, whoa, don't do that. No, don't do that. Like, what are you doing? You're giving up draft picks for this guy? No, what's the matter with you? But so I just think they're like, to hell with that. We're not doing that anymore. Like the notion that we're going to throw more draft picks at Baltimore for Lamar Jackson, you know, that doesn't make any sense given their lack of success throwing draft picks at other teams the last few years for veteran quarterbacks that they thought could be difference makers. So I think they've talked themselves into Sam Howell. I think that's as basic as I can make it. They have convinced themselves that Sam Howell has enough upside that they're going to roll with him and in the process be able to take that money that they otherwise would have had to spend on a quarterback and sprinkle it around on keeping Payne when obviously they had drafted Fedarian Mathis to replace him last year. I mean, clearly that was the move.
Right.
And you know, possibly, you know, giving Cam Curl an extension before he becomes a free agent and taking him off the table. So I just think it's that. I just think they're just tired of swinging and missing on big name quarterbacks.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's exactly what it is. And when Rivera said the other day about their roster building for the first time, I mean, basically what he's saying is for the first time, they're not putting their eggs in the we got to get a bigger name quarterback basket. They're saying we're going to Sam Howell, effectively erase the name and just view him as player on rookie contract.
And
then, you know, they added to Brissett. You know, they paid him more than any of those other spot starters, backup types. And he's you know, he's solid. He's better than what they had in theory. But that's, again, different than saying they're going to be all that. If Sam Howell works out, they are going to be positioned nicely, whether it's for Rivera or another coach. But, you know, this is a good segue to the Wizards, because part of the reason why they're in this position is especially the last couple of years, is being sort of stuck in the middle of the draft board, right? I give Rivera a total pass for taking Chase Young over Justin Herbert or Tua, because you had Dwayne Haskins, and you got to give him a shot, especially with the owner and all that stuff.
Right.
But then they go 7-9, win that division. If they lose the last game, they're picking like 10th or 11th and in spot to get Justin Fields or Mac Jones. Instead, they go to 19, don't get any of those quarterbacks, and they take Jamin Davis.
Yeah.
Last year, a year where there's not only one quarterback goes in the first two rounds, they had already made the Carson Wentz move, and then this didn't take anybody else until Howell in the fifth. And now this year, they're middle of the pack. They're 16th. They're likely not going to be in position to get a quarterback. This is where the Wizards have been at forever. It's great that they finally, at the end of this year, recognize they should stop winning games or trying to.
Yeah.
Focus on odds. But whether it's the quarterback or the difference makers in the NBA, the cleanest path is having a top 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 pick to get that guy. And you got to commit to that at some point. And from the Wizards' perspective, it's probably the most frustrating aspect of all of this, that the owner who thrived here, having the number one and number three pick in Wall and Beal, doesn't understand that is the best way for them to go forward. And this is why they're stuck, it feels like.
Right. And another top three pick in Otto Porter. I mean, they went 1-3-3. I mean, that's the formula, right? Like,
Jan Vesely at 6, obviously it didn't work out with the player, but had the opportunity to have another guy there as well.
Yeah. So they've had, in the last 15 years, they've occasionally had high draft picks, but they haven't had one since Beal. That's the problem. They haven't had a top. I mean, I wrote about this a couple of weeks ago. The NBA has this thing every year at All-Star. This, they have their rookie showcase game, which is basically anybody with a pulse that's a rookie in the NBA gets invited to this game just to showcase some of the young players in the league. And here's the guys that are going to be stars in the next couple of years, and keep an eye on these guys. And the Wizards literally haven't. They've had in the last 10 years, they've had Hachimura and Denny Avdija. I mean, that's it. those are the only two guys that have been in a rookie game, and neither one of those guys is anything approaching a star player. You know what I mean? So that just tells you how bereft they've been of even just mediocre young talent. Just okay players that could, because the league puts everybody in the rookie game, and so that's just, it just tells you where they've been, and this notion of this incrementalism, which they continue to ride on, which is, if we can just get a little better next year or just a little better, and then we'll be in a position to finally, make a trade for another superstar, because they consider Bradley Beal a superstar. And that's their rationale. Is if we could just continue to add here and there, and then soon we'll be in position to really make the move. I'm not going to sit here, Ben, and say that there's been no progress. I'm not saying that. I mean, Corey Kispert has gotten better. Yes, he's second year, he was better than he was in his first year. He obviously can shoot it, shoots a high percentage from three. Moves very well without the ball, tries to defend. He's better. But Avdi is better than he was last year. So it's not like they're not putting any work in, but the progress is so slow. That's the issue I have with it, is that at this rate, I'll be long gone, and my kids maybe will see some, fruition. You can't just keep trying to improve a little bit every year. Maybe we can win 5 more games, I just don't see that. I don't think you can ask this fan base like you said before, that's been waiting more than 40 years since the last really legitimate championship contending team to keep waiting. That's what bugs me about this whole notion of not tanking. I get it. It's hard to tank. I get it. It's not fun to lose 60 games in a season. But how else are you going to get a chance at generational talent? you just don't get superstars available in free agency all that often. It's very rare now. Teams do not let this happen. They lock up their best young players before they ever become free agents. And so how are the Wizards planning to add difference-making players? And that's where I'm like, okay, the only way you can do that is to be high in the first round and the top five picks of the first round. There's no other way to do it that I know of. So they but they continue to like push back on that, and we're not going to do that. And I don't really know what their end game is, because it's always just, well, we had bad luck with injuries. Well, we, you know, if this hadn't happened, we would have been better, or we need more time to look at this group together to see how good that they can be, you know? And you know, taken one-on-one, those could be legitimate reasons and not excuses, but when you put them all together, it just sounds like excuses, you know? So, that's the frustration I have with how the Wizards are trying to roster build.
Right. You know, like if you look at the Nats right now and ignore what happened before this, right, you can say, okay, and I'm not going to even try to guess, say the name, because I'll butcher it, but CJ Abrams, I know, is one of their prospects, and a couple other guys. And you can say, well, look, they have some interesting prospects. The problem for Nats fans is it's on the heels of a team that had just won the World Series recently. Right. And to get them, you traded away a 22, 23-year-old superstar that everybody's wearing his jersey, and you view him as a linchpin. So the prospects in that case, maybe they're good eventually, but it doesn't feel good right now. The Wizards are the opposite. As good as Bradley Beal is, he's not viewed as one of the generational players in the league, and they don't have other, like, you know, Kuzma's good, Porzingis is good, they're all-star level-ish, but like they're not going to take you to another the next tier of contenders. And then none of their young guys have looked that dynamic. That's why trading Beal and doing that rebuild would make everybody feel so much better. And that's what I never understand with what I assume is the owner's thinking. Why does he feel he needs to be like the 8 seed to get people to care? They will care more if you said, hey, all of a sudden we got a shiny new object over here because this guy was the 3rd pick in the draft. Plus, we got these players in the trade or whatever. That team is going to be way more interesting to fans than the middle of the pack one who with no upside.
Well, I would, you know, like you said with the Nats, like, yeah, it's hard right now, but at least the Nats gave you a run. You know what I mean? Yeah. At least they won 4 division titles and, you know, and were in the playoffs, you know, multiple years, and they got to a World Series and they won the World Series, you know, like, at least there's something they can go, hey, we did this before, we can do it again. And you may not believe them, but at least they have something approaching credibility in terms of, we built a championship roster. If you just stick with us, we've shown you we can do it. But the Wizards don't even have that. And that's why I didn't understand 2 years ago when they had clearly given up on John Wall and said, he's just not worth it, we're not going to invest any more time in him. That was the optimal time to trade Beal too, you know, and just completely rebuild. And because I can at least explain that to fans. That's the frustrating part, is that people may agree or disagree with the notion of total rebuild. Like, some people hate it because you have to lose a lot. And some people love it because it's young players and it's new and all that. But at least I can explain it, you know, like, and then you can decide whether you agree with it or not. But at least it's a clear path. Like, you know, okay, they're going to do that now. That's how they're going to try to build this thing, you know. But this is just kind of like,
you're saying you can't explain a middle build or whatever the heck that is.
It's just this notion that, you know, and it's always just kind of, you know, rearranging the deck chairs. Like, okay, we don't have Wall anymore. All right, we got Russell Westbrook. That's cool. Great. You put a little run and he got sort of into the playoffs. And then he doesn't want to be here anymore. All right, well, we got Dinwiddie now. All right, now that's going to work. Well, that lasted half a season. All right, well, we're going to get Monty Morris and Will Barton. Well, we let Will Barton go because he's not really that good. You know, and so it just kind of, you know, continues to spin its wheels without gaining any real traction, because the team never gains any traction. You never get the sense that they're building. You never get the sense that, oh man, they are so much better than they were 4 years ago. Like, yeah, they're more talented, but are they a better team? Somewhat, yeah, I guess a little, yeah, but not in any way that makes them any type of a threat in terms of making a playoff run. Like, you just, like, you can't say here's where they're going to be 3 years from now. They're going to have this guy are going to be their primary guys leading them to a 55 win season and a 2 seed in the East. Who believes that? You know, like, your best three players went 16 and 19 together this year when they played together, you know? So what's the rationale for just making yourself more expensive? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I mean, I'm just sitting here nodding along the whole time, because it's just really hard to fathom. And to your point of the constant changes, I don't want to hear them use lack of continuity as an excuse. You're the ones making the lack of continuity, because if every year you're like, well, like you said, we'll go to this plan, we'll go to that plan, we'll go to this plan. Well, nothing's ever going to change. And Right. Even if you say, well, if we keep Kuzma and we keep Porzingis with Beal, then we have some continuity. Well, okay. Again, you only played 35 games together this year. Wasn't exactly ideal record-wise. But then the issue is you still can't build upon that, like unless they get really lucky in the lottery, Yeah. They won't have any other assets to really improve. So if the Denny's of the world don't take a leap, then, you know, they're kind of screwed on that front.
I think there's, you know, we have to see what happens in the lottery, right? I mean, they're, you know, they could be seven or eight depending on the tiebreaker with Indy, but right. You know, if they were to somehow get a top three pick or a top four pick, I mean, you could potentially, you could see at least a scenario, right, where you could take maybe the fifth pick and Denny Avdija and Corey Kispert and, you know, Monte Morris and try to move up to maybe two. Nobody's trading you one this year. We know that. That's not happening, right? Like, you're going to take Wembanyama, whoever you are. We all understand that. But could they get to two or three maybe? You know, maybe, you know, I mean, there's, if they had a top five pick, eight or lower is going to be very difficult, but if they could get into the top five, then maybe they could potentially take, you know, make a move for that kind of player, move up to two to get a Scoot Henderson or somebody like that. I just think they need, Ben, as much as they need more talent, they just need some excitement. They need a young player that people can get excited about. I think that's the other issue, is that as talented, and I think all three of those guys are talented, right? Beal's talented and Kuzma's talented and Porzingis is talented. And when they play together, they score a lot of points. That's not the issue. They score a lot of points, but nobody, I don't think anybody's excited to see any of those three guys play. You know, like, who's like, wow, I'm going to move stuff around today so I can watch the Wizards play tonight. I just don't know who does that, you know, like, so I think they desperately need an injection of energy and excitement and youthful kind of irrationality, right? Like, somebody that literally thinks they're the best player in the world and they're 19 years old and, you know, they're nuts, but they're really talented. And so you want to see how this goes and how far they can go. And I just think they need that. Somebody to kind of shake the torpor. I mean, they just all seem kind of anesthetized to, we're just kind of 35 and 47 again. You know, there's nobody. And I don't want people pounding the tables and fake anger and all that sort of thing, but there's got to be some urgency to fixing this thing. You know, after all this time, you can't just operate. It can't just be business as usual. It can't just be, well, we'll see what happens in the lottery, you know, or we'll try to add somebody with the mid-level exception. You know, that's just it's not good enough anymore, I don't think, for this fan base.
Right. In the last 13 years, the only player they've gotten to come here who was a stunner was Paul Pierce in his last year, basically. And he was amazing here, but that's been it. Everybody else, right. Nobody else is coming here of who's like, oh, wow, I can't believe they got that guy. And that's been an issue. All right. Right. There's go ahead.
No, I was just going to say, and think about that. Paul Pierce was at the end of his career. And even Paul Pierce at the end of his career had an enormous impact on this franchise the 1 year he was here. And that just tells you, if you just get anybody of that caliber, this thing, you can change it immediately, you know? So why wouldn't you want to do that? Why wouldn't you, you know, give yourself the best chance to get somebody like that and maybe get them when they're young, you know, and have some upside. So that's where I just go, wow, I just don't get it.
Yeah, totally. All right. In the last couple seconds I have with you here before I let you go, I got to ask you a couple NBA playoff questions. It's play-in game start, I guess, Tuesday.
Yep, Tuesday.
All right. So we'll go through this. You can speed round however you want to do this.
Sure.
So many interesting storylines, particularly out West. But for you, from a strategic standpoint, what do you think is like the biggest strategic variable to keep an eye on wherever, East, West, whatever, for these playoffs?
Well, I mean, you know, you usually start with the closest series or the four or fives. And so, you know, I look at, you know, the Clippers and Phoenix. And if Paul George really is going to be limited, I think that really makes it hard for the Clippers to win. Except, you know, I can't tell you with any certainty that Chris Paul or KD is not going to get hurt again, because that's been a problem for them the last couple of years. So those series are going to be interesting to me. I'm fascinated by Cleveland and New York, because I think it's, you know, Cleveland was one of the best defensive teams in the league this year with Allen, again, a team that went out and got a young center, you know, and then drafted Evan Mobley and then traded for Donovan Mitchell, you know, like, wow, how did they do that? They must be the smartest guys in the world, you know, like, so it's just, and they won 50 games this year, you know, so, that's going to be a great series, I think. The other ones, I mean, you know, I don't see a lot of, I think Sacramento Golden State is going to be fun, right? You know, it's going to be a fun series up and down and a lot of scoring, a lot of offense, and Sac might get a game. Maybe they'll get two games. I don't know. But other than that, I'm not sure I see anything other than chalk, really. I mean, I guess I would say Miami always, assuming they beat Atlanta and get to the seventh seed. I mean, Miami-Boston would be a fun series just because I think they know, you know, Miami knows how to win playoff games, and Jimmy Butler is the kind of guy that can go nuts in a seven-game series. So that would be a fun series. But other than the ones that I mentioned, I think it's pretty much chalk, I think, in the first round.
So the Lakers are in the playoff scenario, so they could be the seven or the eight seed if they advance. Obviously, because of LeBron and Anthony Davis, they're going to be viewed as a threat by somebody. Are you buying their recent resurgence, whether they play Memphis or Denver?
I think AD's been really good toward the end of the season. Look, you know, he looks like he's healthier, right? And he's playing at a higher level. And I do think the moves that they made at the deadline, they certainly are more equipped to be in a factor in a series. And you can't discount LeBron for that reason. I don't know. I think my guess is they would rather play, well, I'm sure they'd rather play Memphis than Denver, right? I mean, Memphis is just kind of, the season ended weird for them. And, you know, they're losing one of their key players to injury going into the playoffs. And, you know, John is really talented, but clearly maybe more important things on his mind right now. So I'm sure that the Lakers, you know, are looking to beat Minnesota, who's not going to have Rudy Gobert for that game tomorrow night, who's being suspended, you know, an imploding Minnesota team, you know,
yeah,
just looks like they're completely, you know, it's unbelievable watching them the last game of the year, two teammates get in a fight. One of them gets suspended and another teammate breaks his hand, going to the locker room after getting ejected from the game and is now going to be out for the playoffs. I mean, if you look up the word implosion in the dictionary, that's a team. You see the team picture of the Timberwolves. I mean, it's just so. Yeah, I think that the road for the Lakers is beat Minnesota and get Memphis in the first round and maybe use Memphis's youthful exuberance against them in a seven-game series?
NBA is so much about individual players and the storylines that attach to them. So many to choose from here. Who for you is like the one player storyline that you think is the most interesting for the playoffs?
I mean, I think to me, it's like if you look at that second round in the East, assuming Philly beats Brooklyn and Boston beats Miami, a Philly-Boston second round series, I think would be epic. I would love to cover that series, even though we got 75 people in Philly and Boston at the Athletic. Yeah. But I would still love to cover that series just for the drama, the storylines, two really good teams slugging it out. I think that would be a lot of fun. And again, the Sac Golden State is just going to be ridiculously fun, I think. No expectations that Sac, you know, is going to win, other than the people at Sacramento who think that they, you know, are a pretty good team, and they've got a good coach who knows Golden State very well, obviously, and Mike Brown. So I'm sure they feel like, hey, we can win this series, especially since Golden State's been so awful on the road this year. But the thing that's, to me, intriguing about it is Golden State being an older team. This is the one series they don't have to ever leave the ground. In fact, they won't leave the ground, you know, like they'll be, it's a 70-minute drive from San Francisco to Sacramento. So they'll bus it up. They'll bus back after every game and sleep in their own beds every night. So I think that they have a great chance in this series because it's going to be on the road technically, but I guarantee you there's going to be a ton of Warriors fans in Golden One Center in Sacramento. So they, I think, have a great opportunity to pull the upset there in the first round.
And just lastly, what's your NBA? Everybody loves making finals predictions, especially when we don't even know exactly how all the first round matchups. But that said, this is why you're in the Hall of Fame. Who? What's your finals matchup and who's going to win?
Look, I think Milwaukee's the best team in the league right now. I think they're getting healthy at the right time. And Middleton's still not quite, anywhere near 100%. But, they just have multiple guys, multiple ways to defend you. You know, with Holiday on the ball and then Giannis kind of on the wings, closing out and chasing people down. And then Brooke Lopez in the middle is just a phenomenal defensive player. Like, they really can lock you up defensively. And they've got more than enough offense to score in games and playoff games to win games. And Giannis can detonate for 50 anytime. So I think they're the best team in the league. I think they're going to, I suspect they get out of the East, whether it's Philly or Boston in the conference final. I just feel like Milwaukee's built for this, having won a championship. I think they have a lot of mental fortitude, right? And in the West, again, I think if Phoenix stays healthy and KD's healthy for the playoffs and Booker's healthy and you can get enough out of Chris Paul, he doesn't have to carry it anymore. I think Phoenix, to me, is a team that could really get on a run and run the table just because they can be so dynamic offensively. I just don't know how do you guard him? You know, how do you guard those three and then try to guard Ayton just running, foul line to foul line and getting lobs and dunks and shooting in the paint? I just think that I know they gave up a lot for KD, but the four that they have, Those four are pretty good. And they were, they were beating people by a lot before, in the games that Durant was able to play. So I think we may have a rerun of the finals from a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I think that's a good call. All right. At David Aldridge DC on Twitter, he is a part of the Hoops Adjacent podcast, which is a great listen with him and Marcus Thompson and all kinds of great guests. And of course, he's a prolific writer on the NBA. And no doubt when we get some news here about the sale and what the draft or things like that, we'll get DA to dip back into some Commanders writing, I'm sure, as well. I appreciate the time. Good luck out there with all your NBA travels and focus. And we'll see what happens.
All right, sir. Thank you for having me, Ben. Always like talking to you.
Thanks, DA. All right. Always a fun time talking to DA. As I said, I've got some mailbag questions here. I'll probably try to answer at least a couple each episode this week and maybe beyond, but I had some good ones here. Let me look through here really quick here. What are the ones that we have here that I think I want to discuss here? All right, here's a question from on Twitter at Spider Strick. What percentage of all the people you've discussed with outside the building think Sam Howell is truly capable of being the guy? How many think Ron and company are not serious about going with him? How many think they are nuts? Good question. And look, I'm not going to lie. Like, when I first heard about this, you know, I definitely got sort of a puzzled look on my face, I'm sure. I explained to you all very early on in this process what I thought was happening here. And I believe I've been, I believe I'm accurate on this view. And that is the early mention of Sam Howell way back in January as the starter going into the offseason program was as much about moving on from a lousy finish of the season and the Carson Wentz era as it was stating anything else. And they did a good job with that. We quickly moved on to the possibility of what Sam Howell could mean. They obviously subsequently added Jacoby Brissett. But the question is, forget why Washington did this. What does the rest of the league think about this? Well, I'll say this in terms of Sam Howell. I've had several front office people, and I say several, I mean more than one, less than 10, I don't know, somewhere probably in the 3 to 6 range, say that they thought Sam Howell slipped more than he should have in the draft. Now, obviously, that's easier said than done. Also, or I should say it's easier to say that after the fact. And, you know, the entire draft class fell in part because Kenny Pickett was the only quarterback picked in the first round that year, and then everybody else got pushed back a bit further. But generally speaking, I think people have been fairly optimistic about how, which is different than saying he's going to come in and you know, lead Washington to the playoffs, or he's going to be a dynamic starter. It's to say more that they think it's a worthy opportunity to take a flyer on this guy, you know, especially based on what Howell did his second year at Carolina when he had a lot of weapons around him. So I'm not really getting a lot of people who think, wow, this is no shot, that Sam Howell is a lousy prospect. He was picked in the 5th round for a reason, that there's no chance. I'm not getting that vibe at all. But again, in terms of like, is Washington sort of nuts for doing what they're doing? You know, again, I think for the majority of the people understand the position that they are in. That's a combination of the uncertainty with the ownership sale. That's a combination of being in the middle of the first round. That's a combination of, look, if they wanted to pay Daron Payne, and, you know, even though Daron Payne doesn't cost that much on the cap this year, you can still only kind of do some of these things when you're paying a quarterback, a potential starter, or less than $1 million. Even with Jacoby Brissett, you're talking about $9 million or so, give or take. And that's very cheap for a quarterback. Last year, Carson Wentz counted $28.3 million towards the cap. This combination is not even a third of that, just under a third of that. So I don't want to be like overly optimistic here. Like, I'm not trying to tell you that people think, wow, what a great job by Washington. Like I said, it's more just about an understanding of where they're at, some recognition that Howell has some potential, but I don't think people are going, wow, here, watch out for the Commanders next year in the NFC. We'll see what the draft unfolds. That could change things for everybody, but that's how I would view that notion of how do you, how do the other teams or other sources viewing Washington? I guess I didn't give a percentage, but I would just say, I'll say like 75% seem to be relatively optimistic that Sam Howell is worthy of getting a shot even if I've not had anybody say, look out, Sam Howell's going to be a long-term starter in this league. Hopefully that makes some sense on that front. Let me see here. What other questions do we have? We got some good ones here that I want to get into a little bit more, maybe when I don't have a 50-minute conversation with somebody. Let's just get into this one here. At RJSGO60 on Twitter, this is regarding the Chase Young fifth-year option deal. Why would anyone not responsible for drafting Chase Young possibly advocate for giving him $17.5 million in 2024, given he has 1.5 sacks in his last 12 games? Well, I mean, look, I mean, it's a fair question, and we've talked about this a lot already in the context of the overall defensive line and the roster and things like that. Because paying, as you know, we don't have to go through this again, but paying, extending all four of these defensive linemen is a tough ask from a roster building perspective. I think the thing with Chase Young is as to why you would pay him. If you eliminate the other three defensive linemen, forget that you've paid them, that they exist, that those other investments were made. You know, from a potential standpoint, Chase Young remains one of the shining lights for this group. It doesn't, you know, you're right. If we just look at what's happened, particularly the last 2 years between the injury and the lack of production, I mean, there's really not a lot to get excited about. The hope is that people do improve, that people do mature, that people, you know, figure things out in life in their own time, in their own way, and that Chase Young will develop some better habits, that he will, you know, we won't hear about maturity and discipline issues, that this offseason, when he's not focusing solely on rehabbing his knee, that he's had more time to get out there with trainers, with position experts, with whomever it may be that helps him learn some of these, you know, finishing moves, counter moves, you know, not just sort of rushing in athletically to try to get a quarterback, but doing so with a purpose. Hopefully that can happen this year. And Washington will be hosting OTA starting next week. The full-blown version won't be till, you know, a few weeks after the draft, but people start getting into the building next week. Coaches will be there. So that's going to be an interesting test. And I think, you know, for Ron Rivera, he wants to see Chase Young there to get a gauge of his commitment. The only reason I'm like, as I said before, where I think that not picking up the option is arguably the better move is because you also have Montez Sweat, you also have Jonathan Allen, and you also have Daron Payne. So while the $17.5 million is a pretty big number, it's not necessarily a huge deal if you think Chase Young is going to progress. It's just that, as I've laid out before, you pick up that option and give him that number, it feels to me like it makes it more complicated to then give Montez Sweat a deal. Even if you use the franchise tag, that could be over $20 million based on projections. So it gets very expensive very quickly, and I think they have more options if they don't pick up Chase Young's option. But we'll see what they do. They have until May 2nd to make that call. We'll talk more about this defensive line thing has led to some really interesting questions about the salary cap, the usage, about keeping good players when you have the opportunity, things like that. So we'll get to more of that in a bit. Let me go to one more question here. Let's see here. This is great podcasting without a doubt. Okay, a question is, I didn't have a name for this one. What does the defense need to become elite during this coming season? It's a great question. Obviously, they were, you know, effectively top 10 in a lot of different categories this year. This is despite a really slow start. This is despite moving on from William Jackson, their highest paid cornerback. This is despite Chase Young missing most of the year. And obviously, we'll see if everybody can come back perform at a comparable level, giving them an opportunity to be top 10 again. But to go to the question, what would it take to be dominant? I would say probably three things, I guess. One, that Chase Young does, whether he gets two sacks or 12 sacks, that Chase Young is a presence out there as the primary starter with those other three guys, because James Smith-Williams and F.A. Obada and Casey Tuhill all did a pretty credible job last year as backups, but none of them have Chase Young's potential. That goes without saying. So if you can add that presence, and Chase Young would be getting nothing but one-on-ones when you have Payne and Allen inside and Sweat, he'll be getting so many one-on-ones that if he can take advantage of that, I mean, that would be an off-the-chart scenario. The other two situations I would say are, one, Jamin Davis continues to improve off of what he did last year. I think he still has a ways to go before we think, wow, this guy is a true difference maker. But we know about the athleticism. We saw the growth last year. If that continues, that would be huge for the middle of the field. Lastly, who is the fifth defensive back? This has been an ongoing topic here. The draft, if Washington drafts a cornerback in the first or second round, then the answer is likely that person. But particularly if they draft a corner in the first, is that person someone that could be, you know, I'm not going to say use the term shutdown corner, but somebody who can be sort of a number one corner for a team, not dismissing Kendall Fuller, who effectively is that guy right now for Washington, just saying, is there somebody who can potentially be a little more dynamic? Even if that's not in play, having a third corner who's consistent, can handle slot duties if that's what they choose, can play zone, right? That could be a big difference, because you already have Fuller and Benjamin St. Juice at corner. Derek Forrest, Cam Curl at safety. That fifth spot, to go from a Bobby McCain to a first or second round pick, I think would be a really impressive way to take this thing up a notch overall. So those would be the three things I would say defensively, what it would take to have a really stupendous unit. Assuming, of course, again, that all the players who shined last year perform at a reasonably comparable level this season as well. All right, let's end it there. Big thanks again to David Aldridge for his time. And most of all, thanks to everyone here for checking out the podcast, checking out my work, checking me out on Twitter at Ben Standick, all that good stuff. I greatly appreciate it for sure. We'll have more to discuss here this week. We'll get into some NFL draft talk next episode for sure. But for now, Ben Standick signing off. Until next time.